Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Well, thank you for joining me today on the Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. Joining me today is Dr. Steve Iacovelli. Dr. Iacovelli is a leadership expert with almost 30 years of experience as a consultant in leadership, change management, diversity, and inclusion. He is also an award-winning author and owner of Top Dog Learning Group. Thank you for joining us today, Steve.
Hey, thanks, Philip. It's nice to be here.
So let's kick it off with, what does success mean to you?
I knew you were going to ask me that, obviously, because I've listened to your podcast. And, you know, I really, 20-something-year-old Steve would have answered insanely different than 52-year-old Steve. And so I love this question because, matter of fact, I was just having a chat with one of my coachees earlier today, and her and I are about the same age, and we actually had very similar conversations. She's like, you know, at this stage in my career, success is very different. And so if I kind of take a step back and think what success is, it's, you know, to paraphrase Steve Jobs, it's making your ding in the universe, and work isn't work, it's fun.
Yeah, that's great. So how have you found a way to make work fun with all the things you have going on?
you know, it's interesting. I, like you, you know, entrepreneur, and kind of 15 years ago, found myself into this space where I, you know, I was let go of my last big corporate job and I wasn't quite sure what to do, and kind of hung my shingle out, and knock on wood, it worked out. But I realized how lucky I am that the thing I actually get paid for is something I'm stupidly passionate about. And so, you know, people are like, oh, it's Sunday, you're working. I'm like, this isn't work. This is fun. I'm making things. I'm sharing a message. I'm hopefully changing a life here and there. And so I think if you can find what you're stupidly passionate about and turn it into some way to generate revenue and be able to keep your own lights on, I think you're good to go there.
So do you have and I find myself having the opposite, where, you know, they say, find something you love to do, you'll never work a day in your life, but then it becomes an obsession. And like, you know, you could be disconnected from people, have no idea what's going on because you're just so in that flow. Do you ever find yourself with that type of thing? And then how do you find that balance, right?
Yeah, all the time. And you know, I think now if we look at this, you know, quote unquote post-COVID world, so many of us are working from home. I mean, probably like you, I've been working from home for, you know, 15 years. And it's so easy to get sucked into, oh, I'll just sit at my desk and do a couple of things here, or do a client proposal, or whatever. And I think a couple of things have helped me. One, you know, my husband and I have been together for 25 years, and he knows when to kind of pull me out of that, be like, no, we're going paddleboarding or something like that. So there's that piece of it. But also too, you know, I started playing around with the Pomodoro technique. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're not familiar with those listening or watching, you know, you kind of set a timer and use it to stay focused, but then walk away. Things like that have kind of helped me manage the work so I don't get sucked in and all of a sudden like, oh my gosh, it's 7 o'clock and I really need to go away from my desk and really kind of focused elsewhere. And I think too, having a dog helps too. I mean, you know, he's really good. He doesn't care what if I'm working. He'll come up and paw me like, dad, we're going for a walk now. So that kind of helps out too.
That's great. So let's talk about your the Pride leadership and your focus on leadership development, specifically with the LGBTQ community and its allies. So what inspired this?
Yeah, so my latest book, Pride Leadership, Strategies for the LGBTQ plus Leader to Be the King or Queen of Their Jungle, actually started in 2018. I was at a conference and I was, you know, sorting through my business cards, and there's a woman who's kind of right next to me doing the exact same thing. And she's like, oh, it struck up a conversation. She's like, what do you do? I'm like, oh, consultant, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, how about you? She's like, I'm a publisher. And I said, you know what? There's a leadership book in my head that needs to come out. She's like, well, let's get that book out. And so that kind of started me down the path of figuring out how to design Pride leadership. And then I started looking around. I do a lot of equity and justice work with both within the queer community as well as outside. And I started now looking around at my, you know, LGBTQ brothers and sisters and siblings. And Philip, you remember the original Sex in the City show? I mean, I'm dating myself now. Okay. So you like, absolutely, you know, if she'd Carrie would sit down, the main character, and get on her little MacBook and be like, I couldn't help but wonder, and it starts talking. And that was like the theme of the episode. And that's kind of what went on in my head. I'm like, looking around at these leaders. I'm like, I couldn't help but wonder, is there something about the generic queer experience, if you will, that helps you look at leadership just a little bit differently? And that's kind of where I made the shift from a generic leadership book to something through what I call the rainbow lens. And that's really how Pride Leadership kind of came into being.
Yeah, can you kind of overview what potentially some of the strengths and weaknesses you found, or you know, and
if you're not watching, I'm like slide nerd master, so I have all these little pre-canned things. But when I look at what I've seen in my almost 30 years of being in this leadership space, and we work with big companies, large Fortune 500s, large not-for-profits, and so I get to see a lot of leaders over the course of my time in this space, and you start to see patterns of behavior on what's working and frankly what's not. And that's really where I first came up with the six competencies. And they are authenticity, courage, empathy, communication, relationships, and culture. And in my experience, you know, gay or straight, doesn't matter. These are the top six that any leader should be embracing and really like honing their skills in on it. So then if I throw it through the rainbow lens, let's take authenticity as the first one. Folks like Brené Brown and all these great leadership gurus have been saying for years, if you're authentic, people see it and you're a better leader. Why? Because you're building trust. People know you're not just being fake. That's just kind of a universal given. Now let's put it through the rainbow lens and say, okay, you're a queer person. You're an out gay man at work. You're a trans person being your authentic self in the workplace. That's not just being authentic, but that's power. And so, you know, what I say in Pride Leadership is channel that power to be an even more effective leader than you already are, and do it through the lens of these six competencies.
Yeah, that's great. No, and I could agree with you more, especially on the authenticity thing. The most interesting people, the people that we're attracted to, the people that we want to follow, are just those people that have no problem telling the truth or living in their truth, right? But we all have that person who's like, they're different, right? They're just showing you this veil, this thing, and they're especially in the professional environment. And there's always this underlying trust issue, and you know that that's not the authentic person that you're talking to. 100%. And trust, I think, is the foundation of communication, right?
Yep. Oh, I think trust is building. Trust is absolutely a secret sauce to effective leadership. Period. And yes, I mean all of these. If you're doing them, all these six competencies. Build and foster trust with those. But I was doing an interview right when the book came out, and this really awesome, kind of cheeky host asked me the question. He's like, do you know the secret to leadership? I'm like, hell yeah, I do. He goes, really? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I said, I could have taken my 350 something page book and written one word on one page, which isn't very, good for sales, but it's trust. I mean, build trust, and you as a leader are golden, regardless of what you do. Now, trust can be easily lost. If you do one thing, if I'm not being authentic, people can see that I'm eroding trust. If I'm not having empathy for my coworkers or my team members or even my boss, that's another way to erode trust. But if I have it, boy, you're just building up that trust collateral, if you will. And that's a great way to really lead with success.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had a leader once tell me it takes 1,000 attaboys to make up for an oh shit.
Yeah, totally right.
Same way with trust. So can you tell us about the Lions program?
Yeah. So when Pride Leadership came out, and, having been a former academic nerd, I kind of wrote it like a textbook. Now, and if you're listening or reading or watching or whatever, and you're like, oh, that sounds like a boring book, a textbook. No, actually, it's chock full of bad dad jokes on purpose, because I've both written and read a lot of business books, academic stuff. And I did not want that to be the case with Pride Leadership. And so as my editor said, she's like, this is solid leadership theory with really cheeky jokes. I'm like, yes, that's exactly what I want. And so when I wrote it, I always knew it would be the foundation as a textbook for an online leadership program. And as we were saying at the beginning, my doctorate is actually in instructional technology and distance education. So I was Zooming before Zoom was a thing. And so I'd already started to design this online blended approach, meaning there's some self-paced things and then there's some instructor-led pieces. And it launched March 2020, womp womp. We know what that is, but luckily it's already virtual anyway. And so it's an 8-module program that focuses on the 6 competencies that are part of Pride Leadership. And then there's kind of like an opening and a closing kind of module. And students from literally around the world have been going through it, and as well as awesome allies. You don't need to be queer to like develop these skills. It's kind of universal. You're really helping folks, both in big companies as well as smaller ones, not-for-profit, really develop these 6 leadership competencies through a variety of strategies, tactics, tools, and ideas. And at the end of it, they have a solid action plan they can plug into, you know, what they do at work or just use it for their own developmental purposes. And what I love about the program, though, Philip, is it became modular by accident because I did a pilot and it was, you know, had a whole cohort, 8 modules. So it was basically once a week. It worked great. And at the very end of it, and I had like a big pharma in there, a big telecom in there, a couple academic groups. All of them said, this was great, but if I missed one class or one session, I was behind. Oh, I'm like, geez. Yeah, and I didn't like that feeling. So I turned it into a modular so people control their own path. And yeah, you could knock it out in the 8 weeks, but a lot of folks take their time. Matter of fact, we just did session number 8, which always has to be your last stop because it's action planning. And I did it for a handful of folks last week. And I'm like, I thought y'all were done this. And they're like, well, we kind of put it off because we didn't want to finish the class. So I said, well, there's other ways we can connect and that's fine. But it's been a really, really rewarding thing. I mean, I've had folks come up to me. They're like, I got my promotion because I applied the stuff from your class. Uh-huh. I'm like, what? And it just feels like that's when you do training stuff, that's the kind of impact you want to have. And it's been a really fantastic experience over the last 3 years.
No, that's really cool. I mean, it's great to hear about your book that it's not just theory based, right? Like you actually tried this out on real human beings, right?
100%. Yep.
So, yeah, that's fantastic. So what does success look like for you now with the Top Dog Learning Program?
You know, a couple of things I would be successful. Anecdotes, exactly what I just shared. I've had a couple sales coaches over the years because, you know, I'm not the best at everything. And of course, I'm a continual learner. So my last sales coach, actually the current one I have, he's just like, you're not collecting testimonials. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I should do that, shouldn't I? Yeah. So I've been collecting those more so. And just to read them, it's just really awesome. And you know, and looking at people's action plans, and there's lots of one-on-one coaching points for the program along the way. And, you know, after the program, you know, about 2 or so months, we have one final check-in on one-on-one with each of the Lions participants. And, you know, just to hear how they've applied the stuff and done it. You know, so success for me is when I can empower someone to be even more successful than when we first met. That's really what kind of, you know, floats my boat, if you will.
That's awesome. No, and it, you know, it's weird to kind of bring out that feedback, you know, like it's almost like self-glorifying and stuff, but you have to do it in business. And I'll tell you that I love reading them, you know, I love reading reviews and stuff. And I got to say, it's a pretty big motivator. So I totally get it.
Yep.
So to talking to organizations, people that, you know, even small organizations to large organizations, what can they do? It's just some quick tactics. What can they do to create a more diverse and inclusive workplace?
It's a great question. And, you know, one of the things that I have kind of shared with folks as we talk about ways to foster a more inclusive workplace, and you can be a solopreneur, you should, or like this massive Fortune 50, you should always be thinking about what your workplace culture is like. And so one of the things that we do both in the Lions program and some keynotes I do is you kind of break it down to 3 strategies. You think in, you speak up, and you act out. So those folks who aren't watching the video, there's actually 3 little graphics behind me. It wasn't pre-planned with Philip, but it's just one thing I talked about a lot. So when you think about the think in part first, you know, if you're in a workplace and you want to make change, you want to build a space of inclusivity and belonging for all the other folks around there, start with your own house, man. Think in is about you. And really thinking through, what potential biases do I have? How am I acting? What am I saying? What am I doing to either create a space of inclusion or a space of exclusion? And so you think for yourself first. That's the starting point. The speak up is kind of looking at the immediate folks around you. And so I always recommend thinking through the concept of what's called silent collusion. And are you familiar with that term, Philip, by chance?
No, I'm not. No.
Most folks won't. And that's totally fine. And so here's a story to kind of help set the pace. And this is a true story. I was in Atlanta and this is pre-COVID, and as myself and one of my top doggers, which is what I call my consultants, Lori. And Lori and I were in a room with 38 other humans. They were all part of the client. We were just doing a change project. It was the last meeting. Everyone was like, yay, this is awesome. We did it. And you know, senior executives at the head of the table. And his gender is important to the story. He is the one who literally signed the checks, was like the big sponsor of this project. And so like the big wig in the room. And we're just about to start this meeting. The voices are dying down. You hear that senior executive say, like, really loudly, well, you know how all women drive. And everyone kind of stopped and everyone kind of looked at him. But we didn't say a word at that moment. And at that moment in time, every single one of us, the 39 others in the room, were engaging in what's called silent collusion. We were silently supporting that stupid statement that executive said. And so when we talk about the speak up, it's not letting those types of moments go by. It's having that leadership courage, there's one of those competencies again, to address it and in a respectful sort of way. And that's kind of how it played out. And I was about to say something, Lori kicks me under the table and says, wait. And you know, we kind of like took a step back, and for like what seemed like 20 hours, which it wasn't, it was only a couple moments. And then finally you had this kind of more junior person who was sitting on the side of the room. He just folded his arms. He went, damn. And it made it very much known that he was not on board with that disparaging statement. And we as leaders need to do that. Do much more of that, even when we feel that it's uncomfortable, when there's politics. Oh my gosh, that's a senior executive. I can't refute what she said or he said or they said. So speaking up is an important thing to create that space of inclusion. And then act out is saying, what else can we do? Looking around your organization, looking around your workplace, your website, is it as inclusive as it could be? For example, if you have policies on bereavement, for example. I know one of my client partners recently changed their bereavement policy to include non-human family members. And I thought, like, as I don't have human kids in this world, but I have canine kids. And, you know, when I lost my canine daughter, I was devastated. And for a company to see me and say, you know what, you might have a different relationship with your non-human family members. And we want to honor that when their passing happens and change our bereavement. That's beautiful. That's not a heavy lift on their part, but that shows very, very different inclusive strategies. And maybe someone who doesn't honor that, like, oh, I was just a doll. Why do you care? You know, no, that's my kid. And so, you know, those types of things we can all do within our workplace. So it's the think in, the speak up, and the act out are the best strategies to help.
Yeah. Man, you touched close to home. We actually, our trip, we had to fly back early because unfortunately our dog passed. We got to see her before she went, but yeah, he touched close to home there. So I completely understand. And she was very much part of our family for the last 13 years. And you could not tell me that she was not a family member. So
100%. Yep.
So on that real quick, the having the conversations with leader, you covered a lot in that section and I appreciate that. But I want to dive a little bit into that speak up, if you don't mind. Do you have any tips for how to deliver, you know, those really critical, sensitive subjects, you know, with somebody, especially if it's a leader or it's somebody who's close to you and you see that there's a conversation that needs to be had? How do you have that conversation?
It's a great question. Matter of fact, in the show notes for folks who are listening or watching, we have a free training that helps you with this because it is so impactful. And one of the things that when I was writing Pride Leadership and something I kind of developed is the six strategies to beat silent collusion. And we call it MOPSAM. So MOPSAM. And in a really cheeky, silly way, it's basically, do you ever see those dogs? Speaking of dogs, it looks like it has dreadlocks. It's like a Hungarian pulley mop. That's what they're called, or mop dog. They're like really cool looking. They're kind of big, but it looks like they are just like, you stick a stick on the back of them and you could like do your floors with them. They're a pulley mop.
Oh, dog. Okay. Yeah.
So, and so I have a slide that comes up in the training and it's like a pulley mop dog and his name is Sam. So if you take his name and his breed, Mop Sam, it's cheeky and silly, but it's memorable. And so those are actually the six strategies that can help you in those moments when someone says a disparaging remark, like, you know, a woman drive. How do you do it? You know, the example that I gave with the gentleman was the S. So MOPSAM is the S. You say a non-word, like, you know, just so people know that you're not on board with it. Now, that's great because you're letting it know, hey, that's not me. The bad part is you're not really addressing it. So, you know, each of the six strategies has a pro and a con. My favorite one that I use is the A in MOPSAM, which is ask a question. And it's, you know, and we'll pretend Bob is the executive who said the stupid comment. You know, Bob, what did you mean by that statement? And it's not like, Bob, what did you mean by that statement? You know, that's very different meaning. And Bob's shields up, you know, he's going to be deflective. But if you just ask that, you know, well, what did you mean by that statement? Mm-hmm. And it, what it's going to most likely do, Bob has been operating, assumed, from that unconscious bias perspective. You know, and he's, women are bad drivers. That's what's going on in Bob's unconscious. And so what you're doing by asking that question is you're pulling Bob into the conscious world to help him reflect very quickly. But at the same time, I'm letting it know, like, I'm not there. I'm not with Bob. So that's one strategy of the six. But, you know, I often have people ask me, but it's my senior executive. Can I talk to them later? Yeah, but you're missing that opportunity to let others around you know that, you know what, I'm about creating an inclusive workspace. I'm going to have that leadership courage to address it now, but in a respectful manner, using one of those six strategies that we recommend.
Yeah, absolutely. And letting them know that this is not the culture. This is not the norm. This is an exclusion on it. And, you know, I would also argue that you could potentially be helping this individual out. Because they've gone their entire life with thinking that this is acceptable and probably finding themselves in environments where they're not getting the respect, they're not, points aren't getting delivered because they didn't realize that they offended a whole group of people. Right. And I've personally had that conversation with people before, you know, and it's some of the older generation that had a perspective on certain things and, did it respectfully like you. They did their research on a subject that they were had a strong stance on and completely changed their mind on it. And I know that we think, you know, nowadays in this echo chamber that we have with social media and all that, that people can't change their opinions, but they absolutely can. I think if you do it respectfully and in the right way.
Absolutely. And you know, I always tell people, you know, go to the values first. And that could be the workplace values, the personal values. You know, when people are saying things that aren't as inclusive as you would like them to be, you know, I guarantee most organizations I have worked with in this 30 years or so, there's some value out there that's like, we embrace diversity, we embrace differences, we like whatever it is. And so I tell my students and my coaches, use them because, you know, a value within a workplace is your agreed upon way of doing the work. And so if one of those values is, hey, we embrace the differences of others, it makes us stronger, more innovative, whatever, you know, ask Bob or the Bobs of the world. So Bob, would you agree that that value is, you know, our agreed upon value and it's important, isn't it not? Oh, of course. Well, you know, that statement you just said kind of is really going against that value. How did you come to that conclusion that that's okay? And so I'm not being a jerk to Bob, but I'm also pointing out that, hey, that's our values that we agreed upon. And if you don't like them or they're against you, unless you're an indentured servant within this business, maybe there's an opportunity to realign your values or find a place where your values are more aligned.
Absolutely. So for our audience listening, how do they get a hold of you? How do they follow you? How do they get your book?
The easiest stop is heading over to our main doghouse, if you will, topofdoglearning.biz. You can read about myself, my team, the books I have out there, the training classes we do, the keynotes and such. And there's lots of good free stuff out there. So topofdoglearning.biz.
Dr. Steve Iacovelli, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate all of your insights. And for everyone listening, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks.